go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I worked at Facebook, and so I was watching those hearings last year with popcorn. Like, what you gonna say? Mm-hmm. That's what it is now? Oh, that's the explanation? Okay, that's interesting. When they say, oh, we want diversity, but we don't want to lower ourselves. Why is that automatically the first place your mind goes?
It's a racist place to go.
I have to lower my standards. Like, do something different. I am the Black person who is going to call you out and say that you're wrong.
Hold you accountable.
And that's the thing that they especially don't like. You have to be you, and you need to be vocal about who you are and what you want, because closed mouths don't get fed, and people can't read minds.
This is The Secret Lies of Black Women. I'm Lauren.
I'm Sharla. And it's our first episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to come out the gate hard. Which is why we're talking about something that I feel very strongly about, and I know a lot of my Black girlfriends have had to deal with.
I'm so angry about it.
And it's being the one Black face in a white workspace.
It is like being in the Twilight Zone.
That's exactly what I would say about it. That's exactly how it feels.
Yeah, you know what? I actually feel like this topic is a great genesis to start this show, because when you are the only Black face in a white workspace, you depend on your Black friends so much. Like, as soon as 5 o'clock hits, you roll out that door and you're like, let me call Black people I know so I can just process what happened.
You need to confirm reality.
Exactly.
You need to be like, this was crazy, right? This is not how a person's supposed to act, right?
And that's what this show is. This show is the after 5 call where you're like, what the hell just happened today? Can I just talk to you about it? Can you just affirm me for just like 1 second and let me know that I'm not losing my shit? So that's what we're doing. That's why we're here. This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. We've got Bari Williams in the studio with us today, and she's dropping gems this whole episode. She's a boss. She's a lawyer, a tech advocate for diversity. She's worked at companies like Facebook and StubHub.
She's from Oakland.
I feel like everyone I know from Oakland, they're like, hi, my name is so-and-so. I am from Oakland, and I love it.
I rep hard. Yes. We're going to get into her amazing gems. But before we do, Lauren, do you remember how we met?
Yes, I do remember how we met. We actually met when I went to interview at a very prestigious job, and you were working at the front desk. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's another Black girl that works here. I'm going to be fine if I get this job. And then I got the job. And, you know, there are lots of great things about that job, but I was not happy. And I remember you and I weren't close when I started. I think we were both just like very busy in our own worlds. But I remember like wanting to be your friend because I thought that you were cool and funny.
Yeah.
And you just weren't giving it to me.
I really think that I was at a different place at that time. Like, I was not focused at all. I was very much in my head. I really wanted to leave that job. I was so depressed. I did not see a point of that job anymore. Like, it was just a job, a day job that I had for money. And it's really hard for me, I've learned, to find any kind of purpose or motivation to go to a job that is just for money.
Yeah.
So that's where I was. I feel like I didn't even notice you for a long time because you were just another new person. Sorry, dude. The world don't revolve around you.
I mean, but I wanted you to be like, Lauren, I knew. It's fine. Whatever. So Charlotte ignored me.
Lovingly. Probably. Yeah, very kindly.
And then
I was also dealing with my gluten allergy.
You were dealing with your gluten allergy.
I had been losing a ton of weight. I was getting really sick. I was going to a bunch of doctors trying to figure out what was wrong, and no one could tell me. People were like, you have chronic fatigue, or you have some other random thing. So I just had a lot going on.
We were both not in good places. And then we had a work event, and we were leaving the event, and you and I left at the same time, and when we were leaving, I just remember looking at you or sighing. I sigh to myself a lot. It's a thing I do.
So do I.
And I was so just like, I. So it probably went like this, and me being like, I hate this fucking job. And you were like, me too.
That was our rom-com meet cute.
I felt so seen.
Hated that job.
We both hated that job. And then it just became this thing of like having this deep secret and then it being like out in the open, because I felt really bad about hating that job because it was a good job.
It was a good job.
As black parents love to tell you, that's a good ass job. Yeah. You know?
You're never supposed to hate your blessings, you know?
Exactly.
And it's like, ugh, this blessing is the worst.
This blessing is the worst. This blessing is not a curse, but this blessing is a lesson. And it was interesting for me because I was in a position where, you know, a pretty high level position as like a young black woman. And a lot of people did not respect me. And then you have that thing in the workplace of you're like, is this racism or is this person just an asshole? Is it a mix of both? Sexism? Yeah. I just remember so many instances, you know, at that job and beyond where no one would like trust my ability.
Yeah.
It was really hard. And I feel like it's part of the reason, like, it affected my own mental health in such a way because I went in every day being like, I have something to prove. I'm going to, like, show them. And I'm going to show them with the detriment to myself. And I just wish I could go back to that time and just be like, fuck you. I don't have shit to prove to you. Like, I know that I'm good at my job. And I don't need to, like, do this performative thing of, like, forcing myself to suffer so that you can see it. Yeah. Like,
there's like really, it's a real detriment, I think, to the job as a whole, like to the work environment as a whole, when anyone at the job doesn't feel confident because they, you know, for any reason. And I remember the first writer's room that I was in, like a year after I left that room, or years after I left that room, my manager at the time revealed to me that I had been a diversity hire at that first job. And she said it to me in a way that was just like she felt bad for me, like, oh, you were a diversity hire. And I just remember when she told me that, like, first of all, why was that a big secret? Yeah. as if it was something that she had to keep from me. And second, why is that something that I'm supposed to be ashamed about? You guys wouldn't have had me otherwise. I'm brilliant.
I'm brilliant.
I'm smart. I'm great. And you're lucky that you had the opportunity to hire me. Diversity hire means that they get funding to hire you so it doesn't come out of their budget, you know? This viewing of diversity is something that is not a great thing, like that it's a burden or that it's like something that is supposed to be embarrassing to me in any way. And it's just like, no. I'm glad.
It's only supposed to be embarrassing to you if you have the mindset that it's like, this is a handout because you're not worthy. And you're like, my presence is a present.
No,
like,
you're the ones that couldn't find me.
Exactly.
Because you guys don't talk. You guys supposedly don't know any other talented black people. That's not my problem.
Yeah, it's actually super annoying. And that's why I'm excited to have our guest, Barrie Williams, because this is what she does. She sees these issues of being the only black person in predominantly like white spaces in her field of tech.
Yeah.
And is trying to create change.
Yeah. And Barrie goes into tech companies and consults with them on diversity. And we're super excited to talk to her.
I just have so many questions from personal experience in the past and in the future of just how she navigates it, how she handles it. You know, she's also just, you know, a true boss. She's the VP of Legal, Business, and Policy Affairs at All Turtles. She's worked at places like StubHub and Facebook and, you know.
She's also a mom, which seems like for real.
For real.
She has a law degree and an MBA, and she's an attorney, and she does all these things, and she's also a mom.
Of course.
And I love when we were interviewing Bari, when I asked her to tell us about herself, the first thing she said is that she's from Oakland.
Oakland people rep so hard.
They rep super hard, dude. They won't let you forget it. So I don't want to give away too many spoilers. I feel like we should just get into it.
Let's get into it. Let's get into our chat with Bari.
So excited to have Bari Williams in the studio. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us and being on The Secret Lives of Black Women. Go ahead and tell us about who you are. Introduce yourself to us.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is this morning I was watching MSNBC and they did they had Jonathan Capehart on and he was doing kind of a recap of the California Democratic Party convention speeches this week. And I loved something he said where he noted that Kamala Harris had that mic taken from her. Mm-hmm. And she actually gave, if you look at the tape, mm-hmm. She was like, here, mm-hmm. I don't want no smoke. Mm-hmm. And what I loved from it, he was like, you see, she wasn't afraid and she had no, like, there's nothing timid about her because she's a girl from Oakland. Mm-hmm. So she's not scared of a fight. And I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I went to Oakland for the first time last year, and I'd been to San Francisco before, but I'd never crossed the bridge into Oakland. And it is a very distinct, specific vibe.
Very different.
It is very black.
Yes.
There's a lot of black pride.
And it used to be a lot blacker.
That's the feeling there now. The people are very upset. Everyone I talked to, I got to go to this, like, my husband took me to this African fair in Oakland just because he thought it would be a nice afternoon, and it was a really nice afternoon. And I was just talking to people, and there is this real sense of like turf being taken over.
Yeah, gentrification.
Gentrification is real over there.
It's where
the Black Panther started. And I didn't know that until I visited that. And that's because everybody in Oakland will remind you. They'll tell you.
They're starting a museum, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Which they need. And also at the, so I used to live in the Bay. I lived in Lake Merritt, Oakland, and I lived in San Francisco. And when I lived in San Francisco, I was like, where are all the Black,
all the black people?
They're
in Oakland. Well, they used to be in the Fillmore.
And then I went and went to, but when I went, no, this was
they
like,
used to be.
They used to be.
And they used to be in Hunters Point because the current mayor of San Francisco, who is a black woman, is from Hunters Point. Like, she grew up in a housing project there. So, and she will remind you of that. But what's interesting is, like, the first thing I remember was a girlfriend of mine lived in West Oakland. And West Oakland was like, people didn't go there. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the Acorn Projects. It was a food desert. It was a McDonald's. And there's a BART station. And, like, you didn't go there unless you lived there. You had a reason. And I remember talking to her in 2013, maybe beginning of 2014, and she was like, I just saw a white girl with a dog jogging.
That's how you know.
And I
That's
was like, it's
know.
Over.
It's over.
It's over.
Yeah. That's how you know. How do you feel about Oakland being gentrified? What is the sense there? You know, like, people really feel like they're losing something. It's like a piece of history, very much so.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I look at it from the sense that, you know, it's funny. I had an analogy for someone who was talking to me about the, it was my, I think it was my Lyft driver yesterday who was taking me to the hotel. And he made a comment about, we were talking about the game, and he made a comment about Kevin Durant, you know, leaving Oklahoma to come to the Warriors. And like, oh, you know, he joined something that was already winning. And I was like, yes, one, that's true. Correct. We won without him. Let's be clear. And two, do you want to live in Oklahoma? And I say that as someone like my grandparents moved from Tulsa. Mm-hmm. Didn't nobody want to live there?
Yep.
Like, do you want to live in Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I don't.
There is that sense that, like, Oakland is the best place in the world to the black people that live there. That's the sense that I got.
And quiet as kept, it's like that for the white people who are raised there,
it's
too.
It's the best place in the world to live there.
Like, they
rep hard. The thing that's real fucked up about gentrification is sometimes I genuinely enjoy the things that are brought.
I do too. The coffee shops.
I like the coffee.
And I'll find some oat milk, some almond milk. You know what I mean? I do have a gluten allergy, and a lot of times,
you're like, look, I'm happy that y'all got this gluten-free
you know
bakery
what?
Here.
I was like, sometimes you know what? Like, I wish gentrification, like, just didn't have the. I wish it, if we had a more equal world, it wouldn't be the kind of political thing that it is. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, it's just not, there isn't the equality.
Yeah.
So when you bring certain people in, it raises rent and it changes. So, but sometimes it does make things nicer.
But or the desire to change the aspects of that neighborhood. So it's like you moved here because you liked this thing.
That's what I don't like.
But then you're like, now it's too loud. There's street fairs.
We have people
and you're like, this is why you moved here.
It's calling 911 on churches.
Yeah.
Having choir practice.
Didn't Barbecue Becky, wasn't she in Oakland?
She was from Oakland. And Permit Patty with the little girl selling water is from San Francisco.
Yes.
Like, you knew where you moved. And if you didn't, then you should have done the due diligence. You knew there was a church there when you got here. Like,
that's the thing about it.
So now you're calling 911?
Yeah, that's the thing about it. It's like, there is a way to do this in a way that is respectful to the people that you are displacing, that's respectful to the place that you're coming into.
Also, 911 is not like a concierge service.
It's not a concierge service, but the people that move into those neighborhoods. This is the most racist thing about gentrification, is the people that move into those neighborhoods, they know exactly what they're doing, and they know that they can call the police because they are in a black neighborhood and they're white and they're afraid, so they can call the police and they can use the police as their concierge service, which is, it's fucked up.
It's fucked up, but it's also an interesting thing, just thinking of, like, so you're from Oakland, you work in the Bay. I'm gonna lead this back to, like, what you do, which I'm so excited about.
Because you're like, what do you do?
Well, no. Because I think it's, like, really interesting because you're of a place that you're seeing change so drastically through the industry that you work in.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, when we look at the gentrification of San Francisco, Oakland, the Bay, tech...
Has a large part of that.
And a big part of your work is, like, fighting the fight. Like, what I love about you, Bari, is that you work at these organizations and you essentially call them out.
Yeah. When you're doing this kind of thing, does it feel like you're talking into the void? Because you're not talking to people that look like you.
So the different meeting I had before I actually watched the game was with a person of the majority. And one of the reasons it's interesting is they found me because of the things that I said on Twitter. And said, well, we want to be better. How can we be better? And I literally got out of that meeting and I was like... It had tears in my eyes. I was like, oh my God, someone gets it. Because it's so rare that you feel like, and I said this to him in the meeting, I was like, so often I feel like I'm screaming in the void. And like, you are an example that I'm not screaming into the void.
That's nice.
Because so I called my mom. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Like, they get it. Like, some people get it.
Yeah.
And then they, like, kind of get it. But like, they got it.
Laura and I were talking about this before. I was talking to her about the first TV writing job I ever got. It was later, like, revealed to me by my former manager that I was a diversity hire. And she said it in a way that was like, sorry, you were a diversity hire, as if it was something that I should be ashamed of. And it's because there's, like, a culture that needs to change about the way that people think about hiring people of color.
And this is the biggest thing that I, when I scream into the void, is to remind people that when they say, oh, we want diversity, but we don't want to lower ourselves. Why is that automatically the first place your mind goes?
It's a racist place to go.
I have to lower my standards to find these people. No, it just means look outside of Stanford, Berkeley, Ivies, MIT. Like, do something different. My grandmother used to always tell me, to get something you don't have, you have to do something you haven't done. Like, period. Yeah. It's not that hard.
It's really, like, I'm so glad you're a part of that conversation. One of the reasons I'm so glad is because when we read things in the news, like, you know, AI is being, like, AI is a prejudice or whatever.
It is.
And it's like,
it makes my hair go off for TSA.
Right. Yes. Because it's being created by people who might, like, you know, have those prejudices that are creating it. And it's like, what do you feel like this is... the alarm bells are going off, like, in your work, like, when you're talking to people, like, do they understand the severity of the situation where you have a Congress that literally doesn't understand Facebook and how it works or technology in general?
Can we please, like, stop on that for a second? Because, like, I can't even with, like, I worked at Facebook, and so I was watching those hearings last year with popcorn. Like, what you gonna say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what it is now? Oh, that's your explanation? Okay, that's interesting. And then seeing Orrin Hatch ask Mark Zuckerberg, how do you make money?
That was bananas.
And I was like, but the best part, and honestly, in my entire tenure at Facebook, I only sat in a meeting with Mark once. But I could see his, like, he was trying to not let, like, are you people serious? Like, this is a real question.
What a joke.
And he was like, well, Senator, we sell ads.
Yeah, obviously.
And
I'm like,
and he's like, oh, so that's how you make up. What?
I was hoping that that question was to educate. Like, I was like, Orrin Hatch is trying to educate people.
I thought it was a foundational question. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like,
But he didn't go anywhere with it.
He didn't. I was like, so you literally didn't know.
Well, and my favorite was last year when the Google CEO, so full disclosure, my husband works at Google, and he's also from Oakland, so he sees all of this too, and we have very interesting discussions about it. The best part was the Google CEO sitting there, and Steve King, who was like my personal, like, he gives me gas. So Steve King from Iowa, who was like a proud, happy white supremacist, asked the Google CEO why his granddaughter's iPhone didn't work. And he was like, sir, I don't work there.
It's like really embarrassing.
Like,
it's really embarrassing.
Wrong company. I don't.
But that begs an interesting question that I want to talk to you about is, you know, how white men positions of power, just a hot ass mess, right? And you work in tech diversity, and something that we were talking about this morning, how we met is we met at a job and we were the only Black women who worked at our job, right? No, there was one other person.
There was one other Black person.
There was one other Black person. Yeah. but the fact that there were three of us. Oh, yay. Lord. But you work in tech, so you're often like the only Black face in a room.
In the building, yeah.
In the building. And, you know, one of the things I think about that now I have like the sound mind and body to do as I'm older, but I didn't do when I was younger in work settings, is to be like my full authentic Black ass self in this space and just be like, I don't give a fuck about the white gaze. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna like do me. How do you maintain your sense of self and your identity like in these spaces?
Honestly, I think this is a very complex and layered question. And I feel like, and I was saying this to my mom, my parents are fully who they are. My mom taught in public schools for 40 years until she retired. And she taught in public schools in Oakland and in Berkeley. And she deliberately chose schools that were predominantly Black and brown and low income because she wanted the children to see a reflection of themselves. And I am an only child. My parents were divorced. My dad had other kids. But I in my house, it was me. And there would be kids. My mom would bring kids home. She brought kids breakfast. She would buy kids birthday gifts. She would buy kids Christmas presents. There would be a random kid showing up Christmas Eve. And I was like, who's this? And she's like, oh, this is, you know, Jerome from sixth grade. Like, okay. And I will say the most important thing for me out of all of that was that she taught drama and like oratorical sessions and skills. She started the oratorical competition in Oakland for Black History Month. Nice. And I won it in first grade. Nice. And I was like, did you? She was like, no. You did, but I can still recite the poem.
Oh, you got to recite it.
Oh, God.
Hit us with it. What's the poem?
I'll just give you the first line. Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff.
Yes. I hope you said it just like that, too.
And I did. He's like, and wasn't scared of nothing,
yes,
neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave, and she didn't stay one neither.
Yes.
Yes.
So here you go. You got some bars. But but if you're raising a household that is doing that, you have no choice but to show up as who and what you are at all times. Now, I can put a veneer on it. I can put on a turtleneck and the slacks and, hi, what is your legal issue? Like, what is your contractual issue you want to talk about today? We can do that, too. But same thing I told my son last week is like, you have to be you and you need to be vocal about who you are and what you want, because closed mouths don't get fed, mm-hmm, and people can't read minds. And that's that on that.
Do you think you drew that from your mom when you do this work? Because you are a lot of the times the only Black woman in those spaces when you're talking about something that might make white people uncomfortable.
But it's not only that I'm the only Black person, but I am the Black person who is going to call you out and say that you're wrong.
Hold you accountable. Yes.
And that's the thing that they especially don't like. Because what they want to do, especially in tech, they want to check a box. And they want to say, well, we had somebody here. Mm-hmm. And they didn't say anything. Well, I'm not going to be the person who doesn't say something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm very clear about that. So, like, if you get me, you're getting what you're getting. And if you don't want it, cool. And that's one thing I love about my mom is she instilled this, but she also has that very kind of, you know, boomer black person raised watching all that shit happen during the 60s is scared and reserved. And so when every time I write a piece or do something, she's like, oh my God, I loved this. Are you going to be in trouble?
Yeah.
And I was like, who going to check me, boo?
Yeah. It sounds like your mom gave you a voice.
Yeah.
She did.
She very much gave
she
you
did.
A voice.
And what I feel like I do for her is give her hers. The things that she wanted to say that she couldn't say because she was reserved or she was scared or she didn't want, you know, because in public school, you can't get, that's still a government.
Yeah.
Like it is. You will be reprimanded. And great, teachers union, yada, yada. But you can be ostracized for that.
Pause on that. We'll be right back after this break.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we're back. You know, you said that you're the voice for your mom, but sometimes your mom is like, you know, are you going to get fired? Like, I feel like that's my mom's go-to with everything that I do. Anytime I'm outspoken, she's like, but how are you going to pay your rent?
Black mom.
How are you going to pay your rent? What's going to happen to you? And was there ever that moment of like, I don't give a fuck if I lose this job.
Yeah.
I'm saying something.
Yeah.
And like, how did you overcome that thought in your head of being like,
Yeah, was there a level of I'm mad, I'm over this?
I have nothing to lose. Right?
I think that moment came for me towards the end of my tenure at Facebook. Like, so, candidly, a lot of the stuff that people are seeing now or hearing about now that's newsworthy now is stuff that we saw internally, 2015, 2016. Like, and people raised flags. I raised flags. I wasn't the only one. There were other people. And some of them are still there. So, that's that on that. But I remember being in a conference room with my boss, and there are three teammates on our legal group, and I had the heaviest workload, and I supported more departments than others. And so he's like, oh, we're going to hire somebody and they're going to take this stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. And he said, and blah, blah, blah is going to manage them. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he was like, well, this person is going to manage them. And I said, well, I don't understand, because this is my work. So if you're taking my work from me and you're hiring a person to do my work, why would I not manage them? And he was like, well, why do you think you deserve that? Honey.
Condescending much?
No. Well, and this is also the same individual who had asked me over lunch if my husband got into Harvard on a basketball scholarship, and then also asked me, oh, well, did you get into Cal before or after affirmative action?
Uh-huh.
Sir.
Grams.
You know, this man told me he lettered in surfing, and I was like, I didn't know that's a thing, because I'm from Oakland. We don't, sir.
There's so much.
What in the caucasity for that to come out of your mouth? Lettered in surfing.
It's what like,
do
that?
You not hear the word?
Okay, so you don't understand great.
So you not coordinated on land is what I got out of this.
What does that mean, a letter in surfing?
I don't even know.
Like,
it means you're not good on land, is what
I
it means
see.
To me.
So he's saying all these insane, dumb, out-of-pocket
stuff. And then
stuff.
We get in this conference room, and he's like, why do you deserve this? And I said, is this a real... I looked at it, I said, is this a real question? And he said, yeah, it is. And I said, I want to be clear. You're really asking me why I deserve this over blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yes. And I said, okay, well... Since you asked, I'm so glad you asked. This person took 6 years to graduate from undergrad at a school that didn't give grades. I graduated from Cal in 3 years with over a 3.0. And I went to law school and have two additional degrees that he doesn't have, all within the same time frame. And we are literally 1 month apart in age, and I have additional credits that he doesn't have in terms of privacy certification for law. And I have two additional degrees he doesn't have. And we have the same number of years experience. But you want to tell me that I explain to you why I deserve this? Sir.
That's a really, is there no formal way of requesting a promotion at that company? Because I know that tech companies do have formal ways.
It doesn't matter. Your manager still has to be the one that either advocates for you or doesn't. And I walked, that was the meeting where I was like, fuck all of this. Like, nope.
That was Bari washing her hands. Yeah. Situation.
Like, done. Like, I remember I literally walked out of that. And I told him, I said, this meeting is over. Yeah. Like, I'm done with this meeting. Walked out of the meeting, went to the bathroom, cried. And then called my husband and was like, I think it's a wrap for me with this.
Yeah. And then was that kind of the catalyst that got you started in this work? Like,
no, I was doing the work before that. So here was the kicker. That same person kept referring to all of the work that I had done at that company as that diversity stuff. And I was just like, bro, I started the supplier diversity program at a global $1 billion business. Are you serious? And I did this for 2 years while I was still working a regular position, doing all of this work that you had to hire somebody to take from me, because I was still doing that work and doing it well. My clients loved me. They gave me glowing reviews. I had a whole ass kid while I was there and still doing all this. And you want to come at me crazy like this? No, I ain't got time for this. I ain't got time.
Well, it's also that thing that, you know, we talked about a bit earlier of, like, you have to be the exceptional Black person, right? So you have all these degrees. You're like, I'm putting in time. I'm doing this. I'm going above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And still, it's like, someone had the audacity, the caucasity, to, like, look at you. The audacity of the caucasity. To look at you and be like, why do you deserve this? And, like, you were able to stand up for yourself. What advice would you give to, like, the young Black girl who's listening to this at her job, pissed off at her boss, at her coworker, just looking around ready to set that bitch on fire, who's listening to this podcast and is like, Bari, give me a word. What would that word be?
I would say and this is another thing that I get from both of my parents, is I'm never going to attach my name to something that's mediocre. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the thing that kept me there and kept me still, like, grinding and doing is, like, I don't want anything with my name attached to it to be mediocre, period. Because I know that if I'm mediocre, the next Black woman is automatically going to be tagged with, like, you know, not even low expectations, because the expectations will be higher. And so they're going to want you to scale a wall, jump a fence, jump a barbed wire fence, jump an electric fence, and everything else. Meanwhile, Brad over here, you know, can come in at 10 a.m. and hungover and still smell like bourbon from the night before. So my thing is, just make sure whatever it is, before you even get into this kind of stuff, your work product has to be impeccable, period. Because no one is going to listen to you if you are the person who's screaming about diversity, but your work product doesn't show that you are actually an expert in your field or good at what you do. And that sucks. Yeah. And it sucks because there are so many people who can literally skate and do nothing and get over and get by, or as my husband calls it, fail upwards. And there reaches a point where you have to deal with, is your personal integrity worth whatever this is? Mm-hmm. There is a group chat that, so you count the Black people y'all work with, we have a group chat. And we have a group chat. And somebody posted a meme in there, like, in January, and it said, don't lose your mental health for these raggedy jobs in 2019.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Don't
lose your mind for these,
like,
jobs.
You can, do what you need to do for your work product to be impeccable. And if that place is toxic, then do what you need to do outside of that to get to a place that is not toxic.
I think that's really, that's like the move for 2019. Like, do what you need to do mm-hmm. for yourself.
Well, that's another thing my grandmother told me. Do what you need to do until you can do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yes. But what do you think, like, because I feel like you're fighting this in your, like, work life, and we're seeing it in the political realm of, like, the total... They take advantage of the black female vote.
They do. Just right? like tech. Just like
they don't
tech
takes advantage the black of, female vote.
Of yeah. black creativity and content. It's, you will see something on Twitter one day and it is a complete fleshed out script sold to somebody here.
100%.
By another 100%. Person who doesn't look like that person at all the next day. Or even just as something as simple. And I'm trying to remember, when was this? Maybe 2 years ago. I did... Blavity... What do they call it now? It's 2190. They have an Empower Her Summit. And we talked about people stealing content. That was one of the things I talked about mm-hmm. was protecting your IP. There was a woman who was on Twitter and like the Kardashians and Jenners had asked her to send like, oh, we really like your clothes. We saw them on Twitter. Can you send us samples? They had her shit up in the next 2 weeks.
I saw that. Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Like, no, absolutely not. Haven't y'all taken enough from us?
Yeah, seriously. And it's just like, you know, we see with the DNC and like constant elections where it's like black women will show up and show out and be
oh
like,
my God.
We saved Alabama.
We saved yeah. Alabama. And it's
from
like.
From a alleged child predator who was banned from a mall, who literally rides horses as like election stunts. Like, sir.
We saved
get
them.
Get off that horse.
And it's like in these work scenarios where you're just like, you know. You touch on being like, you're at the diversity hire. But oftentimes that's the person that's going to have the best fucking ideas, that's going to have a fresh perspective. And it's just like, how do you just show people? Because it's like, sometimes I think of like, if black women, if we had our own planet, a beautiful and fucking amazing and peaceful and just the best place on earth.
We would just be out but here like, what with like fresh twists, hair moisturized.
Hair moisturized. Not ashy skin would not be a thing.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, how things would cease to exist if black women were not around, because we constantly are like the fucking unseen superheroes.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where it's like, you give me my flowers while I'm alive. Like, don't write this shit in an obituary. Mm-hmm. I mean, please still write it. But but I won't be there. So I don't care. Like, maybe my son and my daughter will care. Mm. But I won't. And I'll probably outlive my husband. So but. I look at it from the perspective of like, and I do that. Sometimes it's like, okay, cool. Y'all got it. Let's see what happens.
I do that too.
Because yeah. sometimes it's literally that Joni Mitchell song. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you got till it's gone. If I back up and you fall in a pothole I told you was right there, that was your choice. That's one thing I love. Another thing I feel like I'm always like saying something my mom or grandmother said, but it's like, we all make choices.
Yes.
And that was their choice.
What do you do for yourself to make sure that, like, you're centered, you're whole, you're healed, you're operational so that you can do all these things?
Nothing.
You gotta change that.
Yeah, I know. I don't, but I really, like, when people ask self-care questions, I'm not good at it. But I will say that I think, and I don't think this is unique to me. I think this is something most black women deal with, is like, we're so used to taking care of other people and doing things for others that we don't ever stop and really focus on ourselves. Because that question is the same question I've asked my mom. And I'm like, ma'am, you are retired. And now she can't sit still. And so she has been subbing for the last year. And I'm like, what? You quit work to go to work? Doesn't compute. For me, I don't know that I've found my thing. I think for me, maybe part of self-care is doing the same thing, but doing it loud and doing it in fast company and making mm-hmm. people know that we're here. And like, you're not just going to get this vote. You're not just going to get this dollar. You're not just going to get us to use these products and talk about it. Like, that is my self-care. Or other than that, I really stay hydrated. I know that sounds crazy, but like,
no.
My husband and I made a decision that we no longer keep, we were wine club members of like mm-hmm. four different wineries. And then we realized like, no, this isn't healthy. Like, we think it's self-care, but it's not. And so we stopped stocking liquor in our home, period. And so what I did was I had a wine glass. And so now I turn it into my water glass. And so I just drink water from it all day long. I drink probably at least 3 liters of water.
That's right. I mean, I often ask myself, am I depressed or am I dehydrated? Right?
Probably both. Yeah.
Probably, I mean, true. I mean, it is America 2019.
Because you're black. Because I'm black and Trump's America.
So it is, you know, we kind of stay hydrated now, but it's like hydration is key. I also read a thing, you know, thinking of just like self-care, but I feel like self-care is also tied to like sanity.
It is.
Right? Like, how am I going to like not go and like lose it on these motherfuckers or like just lose it on myself? And
I have no idea you were this mad, Lauren.
Oh, girl.
No, see, look, this is what I'm saying though. It's like this is the mask.
Yeah.
But this is literally what we have to do to go out in the world.
Yeah.
And it's annoying because this shit is tiring.
It's super exhausting. Annoying. But it's also, I'm so happy for spaces like this of like us, we're three black women in a room talking about like our rage and how angry we are and how we need to drink water. And that's how you survive this thing. Like, that's for me is like a part of my sanity. And mm-hmm. I read this thing that I was just like, oh my gosh, I cannot wait for Barry to get in this room, because you mentioned in an article that you listen to like trap music.
Oh my God. Again, my mom.
To like get yourself hyped up.
That is my mom. When I tell you my mom is gold, she is like pure gold. And she, like, I'm like, okay. She's like, T.I. or Tamela Mann?
Y'all?
Like, pick one. Pick one and let's go.
So Lauren and I are constantly listening to gospel music and crying.
Right. I mean, can I tell you, it's either trap or gospel. It's like, am I going to listen to Take Me to the King before I get out of my car and deal with this world? Or am I going to listen to, like, some just truly just, like, aggressive? Am I listening to this? I listen to the City Girls Act Up on my way.
Oh, I love it.
Coming into the work, coming act in here up. Today, because I was just like, I got to hype myself up.
Yeah, I love
up.
It. Oh,
I've
love
been
it.
Listening
love
to
it.
A lot of The Score.
Oh, really? Oh, no, yeah. Retro.
I'm going retro. I've gone back.
What are your three tracks if you're just like, I ain't dealing with this shit no more. Ooh. I got to get my head right. Three.
Blow the Whistle. Blow the Whistle is number one.
Man,
like, I honestly
fast.
Use that as, oh, yeah, because I don't play with, again, Oakland.
Oakland.
Yeah. I don't play. Too Short? Blow the Whistle is, when I speak at conferences and I'm allowed to have intro music, I use that.
Nice.
Like, I'm going to set the tone for you from the gate. Like, this is what it is. This is who I am. This is what you're going to get. That is my intro music.
Blow the Whistle.
As soon as you hear the bass, just do 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 do. Like, you already know what it is. You know you're not gonna get no vanilla bland presentation off that.
Yeah.
You so, do your number two.
Number two.
I hate to be like so like bay heavy, but I Tell Me When to Go.
Okay.
Is another one. Third, it probably right now it would be Act Up.
Okay.
It would be Act Up.
Act Up is my summer anthem.
Mm-hmm.
City Girl Summer.
But the thing I don't like now about these songs is like they're all like 3.5 minutes or less. Like, I need a full track. Like, what happened to full tracks?
I need a full track, but you know what? I just like listen to it on repeat.
Yeah.
Non-stop, and you're just like, okay, and now I'm get, in.
It's hype music.
Well, you get it's hype you music. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of feel like you already said it, but what's your secret? Like,
stay hydrated.
It sounds like that's it. Drink water.
Yeah, just drink water and mind your business. I don't.
Drink your water and mind your business. You need to put
it
on a shirt.
You should put it on a shirt, but I was just going to say the same thing.
Mugs.
I would put it on my phone. I would
and don't
as,
hustle backwards.
Yes.
Drink water and mind your business.
And don't hustle backwards.
I was never gonna.
In addition to what's your secret, just because we've talked so much about your mom in this episode, I want you to give us your mom name so we can give her flowers on the podcast today. And what's the best? I mean, you've given us so many just gems, but what's the best piece of advice your mom has given you?
It's I wouldn't say my mom gave me this one. My grandmother did. Mm-hmm. Expect what you accept.
Mm.
And, you know, she told me this in the context of she told
it's
me this
good.
In the context of So I said this before, my parents were divorced and I spent the night with my grandparents every Wednesday night and watched 90210 with my grandmother until I was a freshman at Berkeley, because they live five miles away. And I went to their house one Wednesday and we were like cooking dinner, getting ready to watch 90210. And we're like, ooh, Kelly Dillon. And I was like, well, you know, there's this boy in my dorm and I like him, but he keeps asking me to hang out and doesn't take me on a date. And she's like, because you don't require him to. I was like, what? Come again? And she said, because if you don't require more, people don't have to do more. So you should, you know, expect what you accept. I was like, oh, shit. This is applicable to everything in life. And it's true. You teach people how to treat you. And whatever you accept is what people are going to give you.
That's it.
I knew it was going to be a word. Okay, yeah. We got to get Mama and Grandmama's names. We got to just give them their due.
Yes. Mama's name is Linda Hall, and Grandmama is deceased, but her name was Betty Chapman.
Betty Chapman, right. Linda Betty Hall. And Linda.
Thank you.
With the word. Thanks
for coming, Bari.
Thank you so much, Bari. Fun.
And do you have anything that you want to like promote before we?
No, I don't have no SoundCloud.
you could at this point.
She about to make some shirts.
No, about to make some shirts. Drink water, mind your business, and don't hustle backwards.
Oh my God, that was great. I loved talking to Bari.
I'm ready to like go out and like take on the fucking world.
I love hearing about Oakland and about her grandmother and about her mother and how those two women really, she stood on the shoulders of giants basically, and like her doing the work that she does and always thinking about them when she's doing it. That was really dope to hear.
That was super dope to hear, because it's like to do the work and be a reflection of other powerful Black women, and to like, I don't know, I think about that a lot, just like how you are the voice and you can go further than your mom or your grandma did. And like your kids will go further.
Yes, than right? You. That's what it feels like. Because like when she was talking about how her mother would be scared of her writing certain articles or saying certain things and like asking her if she's scared. And it's like, man, that's how far we've come. We've come to a point where she's not scared and she feels like she has every right. And that's dope.
And, you know, it feels really good to see people who are changing the world who are also just like real.
Yeah.
Real.
It's like, everyday people.
Everyday people, real. She gave us so many like gems and knowledge and tracks to listen to. But, you know, I feel like I wrote it down. Expect what you accept in the workplace and relationships and all different ways of life.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I wrote down drink water.
Stay hydrated. Don't hustle backwards.
Mind your business.
Mind your business. Water. Don't hustle backwards.
I think that
backwards.
Mind your business one is a real good one. It's a real important one.
Drink water. Mind your business. Don't hustle backwards. So what do you think the word of the week is?
I think it's water. We can stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated.
Can the word of the week be a phrase? I think we can make the rules, right?
Yeah, it's a word.
I think it's a phrase.
It's a phrase.
It's whatever we want it to be. I think it's stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Don't
also
be thirsty. Stay hydrated.
I think that it's all like connected.
Yeah.
It's connected.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Remember to check out Bari A. Williams online and stay hydrated. Tell your friends to stay hydrated. Tell your mama to stay hydrated. If your grandma is on this earthly plane, remind her to stay hydrated too.
Thanks, guys.
We're your hosts, Charlotte Laurenston and Lauren Domino. The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. Our producer is Stephanie Kariuki. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Our executive producer is Daisy Rosario. Special thanks to our Chief Content Officer, Chris Bannon, sound designer, Brendan Burns, and our recording engineer, Jared O'Connell. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at the SLBW. See you later.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.